delay, and we're going to play a little bit of this. I think John likes this. Keep playing. Okay. That just killed it. Whatever I did. Okay. Nothing but technical. Hey, everybody. How's everybody? It is Monday, June 24th, 2024. I hate to be known as the show that has endless technical problems at the beginning. It really aggravates the crap out of me. But unfortunately, you got to deal with the technology you have. So it's not that great. But we do end up having a show anyway, pretty reasonably on the daily. We took last week off. I'm doing a few things around the house. One thing when you do a show every day, you can't do just about anything else in your spare time. And last week I was working around the house. I was fighting off some pretty aggressive trolls on the website. So the one thing about trolls, they try and take up all your time, which of course is the whole purpose of them harassing and attacking you. So we were fairly successful at getting rid of them. Just so you know, don't waste your time trolling me, because I've been doing this a long time and I don't have much patience for it. John, any way you could turn off the speakerphone? And make sure you mute your tab on the FacoTube, because I'm getting feedback. Okay, good. All right, tonight's special guest is a returning guest. It's John Robinson, Ernst Zundel's videographer. And he's been here many times before, and I thought I'd have him back on because I found a really interesting thread on Twitter, thanks to Topo Chico, who is a really great supporter of Fakeologist for many years. He's the one that told me only buy Bitcoin and don't waste your time with any other crypto. And to put his money where his mouth was, he sent me some Bitcoin, and he sends me many, many direct messages on Twitter with really interesting content. And I really appreciate Topo Chico. I don't know where he's from in the world. I think it's Texas, but I'm not sure. And thank you so much for not only past treasure, but all the tips you send. And he sent me a really good Twitter stream, or Twitter thread rather. And I sent it to John Robinson, and John Robinson took a look at it and thought it was pretty, he was pretty impressed with it. It's basically a summary of the history of Ernst Zundel, who was prominent in anywhere from the 60s till the early 2000s. So he had a hell of a career. He was really a free speech warrior first. Really didn't want anything to do with one of the biggest psyops of all time, the Holocaust. But he got ensnared in the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal system and even in the criminal court system, and became fairly infamous for basically fighting for free speech and on behalf of trying to exonerate the German people from this worldwide conviction of starting World War One and Two, I guess. Anyway, John, is that sort of reasonable?
Yeah, that's basically it in a nutshell. Yep.
All right. Well, there is no better living expert on Ernst Zundel alive today, I would gather, than John Robinson, because you were there from, would you say the 70s?
Yeah, from the mid 70s, right, until Ernst died, I guess, until 2017, I think.
That's right. Was there ever a funeral for Ernst?
I have no idea. I do have a picture of his resting place, and I imagine there was some sort of funeral.
Now, did you lose touch with him at the end of the last years of his life?
Yes, I did. Yep. When he finally left Canada and went down to Tennessee,
right?
He married an American woman.
Yes.
And he wanted to become an American citizen, so he married her, went down there, and he was going through the process of becoming an American citizen. When 9/11 happened, or didn't happen, mm-hmm. and they created the Homeland Security thing.
That's right.
And under Homeland Security, they came and arrested him and shipped him back to Canada. But as of him going down there, that's when I lost personal touch with him. I still kept running his operation here for another couple of years until he was finally shipped off to Germany, at which time he shut it all down.
Interesting.
So that's basically what happened.
Now, his operation, did he still run out of Carlton Street after he left? Was that still world headquarters?
Yeah, that was, I was staying there and keeping it running.
And did he own the building?
Yes, he did.
Okay, that's fascinating.
Well, actually, what happened was, knowing what would potentially happen, et cetera, and how he might get sued and how they might try to seize his assets and so on,
mm-hmm.
he, unbeknownst, of course, privately, he had the ownership of the building switched over to his eldest son.
Okay.
So that they couldn't, steal it out from under him. So, and I found out a very interesting piece of information that I had forgotten all about.
Okay.
And that was that back in the day, 1984, when they had the first pipe bomb at his place.
Okay.
Et cetera. His house insurance canceled.
Obviously.
And he could not find any other insurance.
That doesn't surprise me.
Oh, no, he did find, what's his name, Lloyd's of London War Insurance.
Right.
Well, they agreed, but then they went belly up. So therefore, when the big arson came in 1995, he had no insurance when they burned his house. I didn't know that.
And they probably waited to make sure he had no insurance, too, no doubt.
Well, I doubt very much of that.
Oh, you don't think there was...
But who knows? It might. I doubt it, though. But the point being that... it was all rebuilt by supporters. They all chipped in all the money necessary to rebuild the place, which was hundreds of thousands of dollars.
That's awesome. Now, by the way, if you guys want to chat, go to shortfake.com/chat. That's my fairly anonymous chat, so you can go over there. I'm trying to switch the tab, and I'm having all, as usual, problems, so I can't even show you that. shortfake.com/chat. And go over there. I'm going to just restart that window before I go there. So give me one sec, John. I'm having my own problems here. I want everyone to see this. I can't even show the screen properly tonight, which is ridiculous. I'm having my own issues here. And hold on. Kind of restream issues too, it looks like. Okay, so if you go to the fakeologistforums.com, go to the bottom tab or the bottom topic, sorry, the bottom forum called revisionism. Okay, and then you click on Ernst Zundel. That's a big thread. I have 32 replies in there. And 11,000 views. So a lot of people will come to the forums and read these threads. This is where I put all my Ernst Zundel stuff. I don't know if you've been to this page, John.
No, I have not. I didn't even know it existed, actually.
Yeah, well, I'm going to put it in the show notes. And hopefully you can join my Fakeologist forums and put anything you want up there. I'd really encourage you to do that to help me out.
Okay, I can do that.
I know. I have so much on the go. I don't always explain everything properly and thoroughly to everybody because I don't know who knows what. So that's why I don't like to reply personally to people about different issues because I'd rather everyone hear the answer instead of me answering it 25 different times.
Yeah, that sounds logical.
Right. So fakeologistforums.com. Just go to, you can just search for Ernst Zundel. The search is very fast on my website, on the forums. And it's a thread where anything that is Ernst Zundel related, I throw it in one area. It's just easier for people to find. And if the topic becomes too big, then I can break it up. But right now, it's just me contributing. I'm sure if John Robinson contributes, then we could probably make it more expansive or break it apart into bigger, into different topics within the Ernst Zundel idea. Okay.
Just want to comment on the messages on the sidebar there from Stupid. John Robinson thumbs up. Thank you very much, Stupid. I appreciate that. And what I really think is amazing is why you picked that kind of a name, because you're really smart.
Yeah, I think I know. I get a kick out of it too. And he's a great truther. He listens to most of the shows. I think he's from the Boston area, and he actually is a fan of Jim Rizzoli, and we'll give our best wishes to Jim. He just went through bypass surgery for the second time.
Ouch.
And I think he's in intensive care, just trying to recover. It's a very dangerous operation. And I wish him well. Hopefully he comes back. We talk to Jim usually every Wednesday with Fake Nukes Phil. And we obviously were off last week and the week before Jim was here, but I think he was pretty tired, because when your blood is not pumping, when your heart's not pumping properly, you lose a lot of power and energy, obviously. So he didn't think he had an alternative, which he probably did not, to avoid the surgery for the second time. So hopefully he has a couple of veins left, because I think he had 3 or 4 replaced from, I guess they pull them out of your leg. But
That's what I hear.
I really hope I don't have to do any of that. Okay, so
in Collaborator, I have a Jim Rizzoli, him and Diane talking in Toronto.
Yes.
Hall of Fame meeting. In case you weren't aware, it was there.
I have watched it. I watched that before.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, so I've got the thread here online. So what I've done is, the thread is right here on Twitter or x.com. I'm going to bring it up in a minute. What I did do to preserve the thread is I backed it up on a thread on Roll Service, and then I uploaded that to archive.ph or archive.org. The only problem with archive.org is I don't think it plays the videos, because this thread is full of videos. So I'm going to read it out, because now, of course, John can't see it. And I am going to share the screen again. I don't know why it's not switching tabs on me tonight. It's always some damn thing. Okay, so the reason why this is significant, this is a user on Twitter called 1984. And he has 63,000 followers. Now, nice. I only have 3,000, and I've been on Twitter for at least 10 years. So that tells you either I'm completely boring and uninteresting, or my stuff doesn't get shared, or both. But this is just a summary of the trials of Ernst Zundel. And he put this up on June 21st, 3 days ago, and it's got 3.2 million views, which is pretty good, because Twitter, we are told, allows freedom of speech now. But the catch to that is they curtail freedom of reach. So you can pump out all the stuff you want, including porn, I heard on Twitter, but no one's going to see it if they don't want you to see it. So they're really careful to not share controversial stuff or promote it. But this one made it through, whether you believe the numbers or not.
Right.
So let me just read a bit of it. And because we have John here, he can correct or add to it. Because we really haven't done a good... Well, we've done in our own way a history of Ernst Zundel, but this one really talks about the trial and just gives you a little bit of information in about 15 or so, 10 or 15 different tweets. So I wanted to play it with John on here, and that was going to be the total of tonight's call. I also wanted to limit the call tonight because it's the Stanley Cup final on, and as a Canadian, it's almost sacrilegious not to watch it. So I'm getting a lot of flack from my family because they're all up there watching it, but I had already talked to John and I already wanted to get him on, so I didn't want to cancel and I wanted to go through this while it was still hot. So we're going to do this and then call it a night.
Yeah.
And then
I can see what you're scrolling through. I can see the stream and everything, or the thread.
That's true. Right. So yeah. Okay.
You don't have to read it for my benefit because I can read it here. But yeah, just read it out anyway. It would be interesting.
Okay. You can see it clearly?
Pretty clearly, yeah.
Okay. It's the trials of Ernst Zundel. Ernst Zundel, 1939 to 2017, was a German-born publisher, author, and civil rights activist. In 1977, Zundel published a 28-page pamphlet called "It 6 Million People, 6 Million Really Die," written by Richard Varel. And, you know, that's one thing I didn't realize, that at the time I thought that Zundel wrote it. So it wasn't clear to me that it was somebody else's pamphlet. Now, it wasn't really important to me either, and probably isn't important to anyone else either, but I thought that was pretty interesting that it wasn't even his pamphlet, but he published it. And back in the day, without an internet, publishers were pretty important. Now they're totally irrelevant, but back in the day, that was the only way to get information.
Yeah. Well, the thing about the pamphlet being written by somebody else was a little bit important for the legal sense, like being in trial for that kind of thing. Because okay. A lot of people, even some newscasts, made the mistake of saying that he wrote it, but he never wrote it. It was written in Britain, I think, in 72 or okay. something. And since that day, it's never had a problem in Britain. But over here, you know, they make it a problem. But anyway, yes, he didn't write that at all.
Well, over here, one person had a problem with it, but I think they were there as a representative of a much larger organization, Sabina Citron.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, after Mr. Zundel read it and so on, he realized that there was a couple of minor mistakes in it, but maybe half a dozen or so. And so he wrote to the author and asked if he could, before he reprinted it, if he could correct the mistakes. And the guy said no, he didn't believe they were mistakes, and if you want to reprint it, you have to reprint it as is. So therefore he wrote a cover page and an afterword for it and reprinted that way. Now after 1992, when the law under which he was charged was found to be unconstitutional and he won his legal problems, he with all the information that he had gathered through all the researches for the trials, he did write another version with the corrections at the end of it and republished it. So as a corrected version. So there is a corrected version out there somewhere. I had uploaded it on my archive.org channel, but they deleted my channel. So therefore it's not there anymore.
Didn't you start an archive.org, another instance? Did you restart it?
Yes, I have restarted one, a PDF, which is entitled researcher_PDF.
Okay.
But since they got rid of my other two channels, my guess was that it was because of my putting up a lot of stuff about Ernst Zundel and revisionism. And I think that's what torpedoed me, basically. And so with this one, there's lots of other stuff to be put up there besides revisionism. So I'm just not going to put anything up about him because I don't really want this one torpedoed again. You know, maybe I'll start another channel and give it another try. But at the moment, it will not be there. I may find a place to put it up somewhere else. Maybe I'll try to put it up on Odyssey.
Well, Odyssey is a video platform, so you can't really put any...
No, that you're incorrect. You can also put up audio files and PDFs. I've done it.
Okay. Oh, I stand corrected.
If you wish the channel name for my Odyssey channel, it's called Dee's Array.
Okay, hold on. I'm looking at my Odyssey channel, and I am streaming live on Odyssey right now, and I think one person is watching on Odyssey, so thank you very much. And okay, that's interesting. I'm just trying to see where I can upload. Let me see here. Where can I upload stuff that is not... Okay, upload... Okay, there's content. All my content is video. Okay, so we'll go to yours. What's your website? What's it called there?
It's called Dee's Array. Capital D-I-E-S, capital I-R-A-E. That's Latin for the Day of Wrath.
Okay.
Anyway, when I look at my channel now, it says at Dee's Array.
No, I got it.
Anyway, so I have...
I'm going to put a note in the show notes. If you go to the... we do show notes for the show, every show as we go here. Oops, I just closed. But I will put the link to your Dee's Array. Dee's Array. What does it mean? Sorry?
It means Day of Wrath.
Okay, Day of Wrath. Day of Wrath. What is that? What is the significance of that?
Well, it's the day we get revenge on for whatever it is.
Okay, I gotcha. Okay, so under content.
Okay. So in the last PDF I put up, which was 8 days ago, is if you want to, you know, type in that title, it's called Adolf Hitler Puts Roosevelt in His Place. April 1939. And that was a speech Roosevelt sent, I think, Mussolini and Hitler, a telegram, pretty impertinent telegram, you know, basically telling them off, more or less. And this was Hitler's reply. When he replied to things like that, he did it in front of the Reichstag as a speech, at which point, in all those speeches, he always broadcast over a shortwave around the world, because he knew about fake news back then. So anyway, this is the printed version in English of the text of the telegram and the speech. And I would be willing to bet that that was one of his most important speeches.
Okay, where is it here? I'm just looking now. What's it called again? Sorry.
Yeah, if you're on Odyssey, just type in Adolf Hitler Puts Roosevelt in His Place.
Adolf. Okay, I see that. That is a... Okay, so okay, this is a video, though. Oh, no, I see. It's an MP4. No, it's... Okay, I see what's happening. This is interesting. So here's the PDF. Okay, I gotcha. Okay, good.
Because when you look on the page, like the main page, all the videos have a little camera beside the length. And the PDFs have a little card thing, so you know it's a PDF. Audio stuff, I think, has a pair of headphones beside the title.
Okay, this is news to me, so thank you for educating me. I'm always here to be educated. I did not know that.
Yeah.
So I'll put a link to that.
Yeah, I also just put up a list of the winners of the 1936 Olympic Games in German. If anybody wants to see that, it's a JPEG.
And one of the things that always fascinates me about certain people such as yourself is you've been doing this for 50 years. What drives you 50 years later to do this, to do this work? And obviously it takes up a good chunk of your time.
Well,
because you're now a man and you're in your 70s now, because you've been doing it since your 20s. So you gave up a lot of your youth for this. You probably gave up friends and family for this.
Yeah, I did. But if I could be flippant about it.
Yeah.
After Ernst passed away and stuff. I guess it's like I just did it on, what do you call it, on momentum, you know?
Yeah, you had a lot of momentum.
And habit. Been doing it so long that I just kept on doing it. Now, that's kind of on the flippant end of it. And
well, that's not really flippant, though. That sounds realistic.
Yeah. And then on the other hand, and every once in a while when I get a little, I see some more anti-German stuff, you know, new anti-German movies coming on, more of this really nasty stuff, etc. And that just hardens my resolve one more time to go ahead and carry on the work, you know. And sometimes, the odd time, you get this anti-Ernst on it. Well, it's like this 80 years of D-Day type of thing. You know, one more time, all these people are out there breastfeeding about how we won and we were the good guys and all this crap, etc., etc. And I think of all the human beings, like the whole thing that gets lost in this quite often in all this stuff is that what we're talking about here actually is humans, you know, human people. Like my father, the German soldier, he's not just a German soldier, he's a German man, he's a human being. He has thoughts, he has loves, he has desires, he has dislikes. All these things, all these people, and they do things for the reasons that they do things, because all the situations in which they find themselves, et cetera, et cetera. And this is all kind of wiped away with they're the bad guys and we're the good guys. Nobody takes into consideration the human aspect of things. I mean, take Adolf Hitler, for instance, you know. Guess what? He was exceptional. He was an exceptional person. But he was still a person, you know. He's still a human. He had human wants, he had human thoughts, he had human loves, he had human dislikes, just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. Just because he happened to be on a higher plane than many others doesn't dehumanize him or the people that went with him and did all these things with him, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm going about people in general, you know, not just that era, but so much in the media and all these places when they talk about things, it's so dehumanizing, you know, that really annoys me too. Mm-hmm. And so I keep blasting away, you know.
Now, do you have anyone that you can bounce ideas off and work with on this? Because it's a lonely path.
No, I don't have anybody.
There's nobody from the Ernst Zundel camp of the past that's hanging around, or they all scattered really over time.
Well, yeah, we lost touch over time. I mean, once Ernst went down to Tennessee, that basically broke up everything. Right? Without the leadership personality to hold everything together, you know, to make the meetings, to do all these things, etc.
Yeah.
Everybody else just eventually started to wander away, started to disintegrate. And of course, once he passed away, well, it was definitely it. And a lot of the people involved in that were older, and they were also passing away.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, his lawyer, Doug Christie, and Barbara Kolaska, and all, they're all dying, et cetera. So,
doesn't that show you the importance of cultivating the youth? Because
indeed, absolutely.
Because we all get replaced in the end. We all die off, and if that's the one thing that you just can't get around, you can't get past, even though the transhumanists are trying to extend life into the great future, which good luck with that. But yeah, if you don't, if you don't have someone to inherit the mantle or the cause or even your house, then it'll just dissipate into the unknown ether and you'll be a distant memory.
Yeah. So the, Well, so that's why I really enjoyed all these interviews when all the high school and university students came to interview Ernst, because here's all these young people getting educated, you know.
Yeah.
And as you may or may not know, I don't know if I mentioned it before, but that's, in the end, that's how I got to meet my second wife. She was a high school student, came to interview Ernst.
And you wait, and you waited 10 years before you approached her.
No, it took me 10 years to notice her. So,
and any, and first of all, any high school student interested in history, period, would be strange.
Yeah. Well, it's not just that. She said that, and some of the other students all also said that their teacher assigned them that. Go interview her in Sunto.
That is a very, that would never happen today.
No, I don't imagine it would.
Not just for Ernst, for any alternative, any alternate.
Oh yeah, version. For sure.
That I would agree. Never happen. Forget Ernst, but.
Oh yeah, things have become so politically correct. And so, yeah.
And just, you know, the sheer volume of content that Ernst put out is just, it's astonishing. It really is.
See, that's in videos that people maybe are not aware that he also put out two newsletters, monthly newsletters, one in German and one in English. And sometimes they had them translated into different languages. And by the time we were finished, I think he had pretty close to 500 newsletters in each language that he had also put out in the meantime, besides everything else, and all the live shows and TV shows and radio shows. And he did, what, I don't know how many, I really did lose track of how many hundreds and hundreds of radio shows he did that we recorded and sent down to the States to be broadcast over shortwave and FM. Hundreds of them.
Yeah, he was really innovating before the internet, and it probably took a lot more effort, a lot more money, but he was pushing extremely hard. He almost, it seemed like he went to Tennessee, where you say things started to unravel right when the internet was getting going. Because the internet's been going since the, I wish I wrote down the date that I first found a website. Because I was on the text internet before that. I wish I wrote down the date, because I can't remember what date it, what, when it was. But I'm going to guess it was the early 90s when someone said, oh, there's this graphical interface that you can look at. And it was, you had to use the Netscape browser. I remember that. But it was the early 90s. But the point is that it's such a tremendous vehicle for publishing information, audio, video. I wonder, and he was losing momentum at that point. I don't know if he was just tired of doing it, or he, or the internet wasn't as accessible as it is today, even though it took us half an hour not to be able to connect tonight. You know, so it's still not that easy when there's some technical issue between you and me. But overall, it's pretty damn convenient.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, anybody who might be watching and listening, if you look at my channel there that you are displaying, these arrays, the one I just put up, the Great Holocaust Trial.
Yeah.
If they want to get an introduction to Ernst and what he was about, etc., that would be a good start. It's all about his first trial. They edited it together out of newscast at the time.
And maybe that's where the Twitter thread... funny. I did a video for a family reunion in 1986. And I was using this sort of crude graphic to create a video. I made a very crude video out of two cassette recorders, video VHS cassette recorders. It was very, very difficult, very crude. Obviously, things have come a long way, but this sort of reminded me of this. This is sort of a computer text that he's overlaid on the video, maybe generated from an Apple or a Commodore or something. But it's funny.
Which text was that?
It says the Great Holocaust Trial, but it's just the quality of the text that reminds me of old computers that maybe he...
Oh, that?
Yeah.
No, I did that. I was the camera guy there.
Oh, so and, what did you use to do that?
And the text was built into the camera. It was a cheesy old camera.
Oh, but okay.
It had this text. That's where it came from. Before I knew anything about text. And, you know, that's some of the first stuff that, you know. Kind
yeah,
of different.
It was pretty damn crude back in the day, but it worked.
Well, that's the original footage with that burned into it. So I shot some with it and some without it, depending on what I might want to use.
He literally took a van ride just down the street because the courthouse was just on the other side of Yonge Street, really. It was a very short trip.
Well, yeah, it was reasonably short. But it was reasonably dangerous, or at least everybody thought so, because we always were escorted by police cars.
Unbelievable. So, it really is crazy.
Yeah, who would do that now? Yeah, it was, escorted by police cars. They were always okay with us. We always worked out well with them. Treated each other with respect, actually, back in those days. So, yeah, that's...
Let me go back to the Twitter thread if I can find the damn thing. A little out of practice, guys, because I've been off for a week and I've been running around doing all kinds of stuff. So I got quite a few messages in the last week. I guess I didn't make it totally clear that I was going to take the week off on my staycation, but I really appreciate the people asking, where's your show? But I do put updates on fakeologist.com/live. That is my webpage where I do put what I'm doing. And, I did put staycation on that page because the blog, I'm still updating the blog and I still put up videos on FakeoTube, but I'm just not doing the show. Obviously the show takes a lot of time, especially when you're trying to connect to a guest. So I just, that's the only thing that I was not doing. So if the show stops from the feed, just go to fakeologist.com/live. And there is a calendar there that I try and keep up to date. And the calendar will show all my guests. So if you're looking for a guest, okay, here's the page here. And so there's the calendar there. So you can see what the schedule is. So I blanked out last week. It's blank. Now we still usually do an audio chat on the weekend, which is a more informal get together. But you can see here I got John Robinson here, and we'll have Lynn on Tuesday and Fake Nukesville Wednesday and Salt Guy on Thursday. So it's the regular schedule. But if I am not doing a show, I usually delete the entry and it'll be blank. So I try and maintain some semblance of organization on this page, fakeologist.com/live. I know most people can't keep track of all the web pages that I've got, but I do try and make an effort to keep people informed. And thanks everyone for joining tonight, because I know every Canadian's watching the hockey game now, and I'll be watching it too in a minute. But I just wanted to get John on mainly to go through this Twitter thread that's got over 3 million views, which I think that's a pretty big deal in 3 days. So that's,
I would say so. Yeah.
So I thought that's pretty cool. So I told John about it because he didn't know about it. And I wouldn't have known about it if someone doesn't send me a tip. There's so much on the internet. Just email me is the best way. Ima@fakeologist.com. Give me an email and I will go track it down and promote it. Now, let me get back to the forums here. So I will have to bring up the thread again because I obviously... Oh, no, it's right here. Never mind. Okay, so unfortunately, when I switch tabs, this thing is not working tonight. I have to do this manually. I don't want to restart anything. So I'll just do it manually here. Here is the Twitter tab. And this is what I was hoping would happen when I'm talking to John and I... just read one thing, John can go on a huge explanation of just about every single sentence in this tweet. So we're never going to get through everything, but at least I'm pointing it out. So carry on. As a result of this pamphlet in 1983, Sabina Citron, and Citron means lemon in French.
Yes, it does.
Founder of the Canadian Holocaust Remembrance Association, filed a private complaint against Zundel before the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal. Now, the funny thing is, a tribunal is not a court. And I just went through this with someone on Twitter today, actually. So what is it? What can do you, what back in the day and even today, what legal jurisdiction or what power does the a tribunal actually have in Canada then and now? Do you know?
Oh, now's a good time to make my first correction of what's going on here.
Okay.
Where it said 1983, she filed a complaint before the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal. That is incorrect.
Okay.
She did not do that. I don't think human rights tribunals didn't even come on until later. She just went to see to the Attorney General to see if she could get him charged with something.
Okay.
But she wanted to lay a private complaint against him, but not to the Human Rights Commission, just to the regular authorities. So,
well, the next sentence is, in 1984, the Ontario government joined the criminal proceedings against Zundel based on Citron's complaint.
Yeah, she couldn't lay any charges without the okay of the Attorney General. And when they decided that they were going to do this, then not only did they okay it, but yes, they joined.
Okay.
To be one of the complainants against him. Yes.
So I think this next sentence is wrong too. Zundel underwent two criminal trials in 1985 and 1988 for the charge of spreading false news.
That's correct.
It is correct.
Yeah, that's what he was charged for. In the news, they say, oh, he's charged with anti-Semitic propaganda and all this other stuff. No, he was charged with spreading false news.
Okay, but what I know that part, but. Was he charged twice?
Yeah. He went to... we had the first trial, and they wanted to, create confusion, so they made two charges against him. One for, did six men really die? Another one called the West War in Islam. But that was only a fake thing, because that was never really a breaking a law in Canada. But that's neither here nor there. Because basically what happened was... But yeah, so he was charged, went through the trial, he was found guilty, but we went to appeal. And eventually, we won the appeal, right? Went to the Attorney General again. And at that point, they had the choice to drop the charge or go for another trial. And it was decided to go for another trial, to charge him again, put him through another trial. That's what happened.
I didn't think you could be charged twice. For the same charge. Isn't that double jeopardy, or is that just in the U.S.?
Well, if you look at at what happened, I suggest it's just in the U.S.
Okay, so in 1985, he won or lost?
Lost.
He but lost.
We went to appeal.
So he went to appeal.
In 1987, we won the appeal.
So in 1988, they came back with the same charge?
Yep, spreading false news.
Okay.
I think that, if memory serves.
Yeah, that's what it says.
I don't know what else they could have charged him with, because they never charged him under the hate laws, like promoting hatred or anything. Oh, Ernst is a hate monger. Well, he was never charged with that. So why do they keep calling him that? If he really was, there should be enough evidence there for him to be charged under that law, but he never was. And this spreading false news law, that was an old English law.
Yeah,
right?
from the 1600s. 1200s. It was, yeah, it was in the English criminal code that,
yeah, I guess, until the 1800s, they revamped their criminal code and ejected that one as being, too old and, against freedom of speech and all that. But Canada, when they went through theirs, they never got rid of that one at that time. They got rid of it now, of course, but not then.
I wonder who the singular person was that decided to find that actually read the criminal code or knew of this very obscure section and decided, okay, we're going to use this. I wonder if there's a single person that they can identify.
Yeah, that would be interesting to find out.
So that would have been someone in the Attorney General's office.
Or maybe Citrone had a battery of lawyers looking through things to suggest what to do or whatever. But eventually somebody had to find it. So yes, it would be a singular person.
Yeah, somebody. It's every idea starts somewhere. So somebody came up with it.
Yeah, indeed.
To wage the legal battle that was forced upon him, he brought together an impressive all-star international team of researchers, scientists, legal specialists, scholars, and many others. As a result of the two trials, an enormous quantity of evidence and testimony challenging the prevailing narrative was presented to the court under oath and thereby made part of the permanent public record. This thread shall shed light on the evidence, testimony, and explosive revelations from his trials.
Yeah, thank you.
This is Zundel's message. There were no gas chambers in Nazi concentration camps. There was no mass murder of European Jews. The Holocaust is a hoax, dreamed up after the Second World War by Zionists, who wanted war reparation, money, to establish the State of Israel. In his house, Zundel keeps an elaborate scale model of the Auschwitz concentration camp. Ovens are included, but Zundel says they were used only to burn the bodies of typhus victims. Zundel denies he is anti-Semitic, but he is, to say the least, highly suspicious of many Jews.
Because some of them are diabolical liars, exploiters of their own people's suffering, real and imagined. They are manipulators, some of them.
And their power.
But because they have amassed an immense power, especially in the media, they have a terrible power to distort and a terrible power to create mischief.
Charges under a little-known criminal code, Section 177, were laid against Zundel by Auschwitz survivor and founder of the Canadian Holocaust Remembrance Association, Sabina Citron.
I'm innocent, as always. No, actually, I consider this just one more step in this struggle to have the Germans rehabilitated. I'm a German. I don't think that the Germans killed 6 million Jews.
Okay, so that was just one news report that's in this thread.
And that news report is actually
this is Zundel's.
One of the final things on the Great Holocaust Trial video.
The one we linked to in the show notes. Prior to the trial, the Jewish Defense League, now classified as a terrorist organization, protested the trial, made numerous threats on Zundel's life, and planted a pipe bomb at his house. This was all done in an attempt to silence his testimony from seeing the light of day.
Ernst Zundel is in a state of siege. Jewish Defense League is out to get him with a harassment campaign that he calls terrorism.
What did they say?
They're going to kill me. I have my choice the way I want to go. I can be hacked to death. I can be ice picked to death. I can have my testicles cut off. Anything.
Mr. Zundel produced some tape threads to prove his point. It came from the JDL.
I'm only a threat to those people who can't stand democratic debate. Or the truth.
We are not harassing this person. We are simply carrying on surveillance.
Where's this guy now? I wonder.
I think he's an insurance salesman someplace.
Okay.
if I remember. Anyway, yeah, that clip there when she's first talking to him, in the background, that's me there working around in the background. She actually asked that we get somebody to do something just to give the scene a little bit of life.
I actually like that girl. It's Christina Pomerski or something from Global.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh.
She was a nice girl. I don't know if she treated Ernst fairly or not.
I think she did.
Yeah. Threats to prove his point. It came from the JDL.
I'm trying to find in the background. Can't stand
democratic right at the beginning of that.
Oh, right here.
Is in a state of siege. Jewish Defense League is out to get him with a harassment
like
campaign.
You're doing pantomime in the background. You're just waving your arm.
In that he calls terrorism.
I was moving some cables or something.
All right. Okay.
Metro police believe a pipe bomb is behind the blast.
It happened just before 4:30 this morning. A device which police believe to be a pipe bomb exploded behind a garage at 206 Carlton Street. That address is the residence of publisher Ernst Zundel. Damage to the building and the car inside was minimal, totaling about $2,000. Homes and vehicles nearby were also damaged slightly by flying metal and wood. This morning's bombing is being...
That was an AMC Pacer that was damaged. Whose car was that?
I don't know. It was a person living on the other side of the alley on the other street there.
Maybe it wasn't there. Maybe it wasn't a Pacer. I just remember that, how ugly that car was in the 70s. Anyway.
Yes, I remember that too.
Oh, my God. My mother wanted me to buy one from her friend. No, I took it to the CAA to get it tested, and they destroyed it. it couldn't survive their tests. It came back on a tow truck, so I was really grateful. But that's another story.
This morning's bombing is being investigated by 51 Division and the Bomb Squad. Police say they have a number of possible suspects.
Basically, it sounded like a powerful blast going off, or a truck or a bus or a fire engine backfiring, and then when you got here... there was nothing but smoke and flames and stuff like that.
The bomb caused about $2,000 damage to Zundel's garage, his car, as well as three other cars parked 15 feet away.
My drive killed me. I don't die that easily.
Zundel, a collector of Nazi memorabilia, has published material suggesting the Holocaust was a hoax. He is a man with many enemies.
But also many friends.
We here at City Pulse received a phone call late last night from someone claiming to be a part of a group called the People's Liberation Movement for the Jewish Defense League. The caller told us his group planted the bomb.
I have never heard of any such organization. We did not have anything to do with the bombing of Ernst Zundel's home. However, I could certainly understand what would motivate some people to carry out such an action.
Meir Halevi, I would have expected an answer like that.
I wish for the day when Ernst Zundel's operation will be totally dismantled.
I think that'll come long after his operation has been dismantled, I'm sure.
Zundel has obviously been expecting trouble of some sort. His home features numerous security devices, like outdoor video cameras with monitors inside the house, round-the-clock security guards, iron bars, searchlights, and barbed wire.
If it's a warning, it has made no impression on me whatsoever.
Wow. This guy's... That's one thing about Ernst. He was not rattled easily.
No, that's for sure. He wasn't. Anyway, a few days after the bombing, he contacted the police to see how the investigation was going, and he was told that there was no investigation. That they thought he did it himself for the publicity.
All right.
So, there you go. But anyway, yeah, the all the security stuff with it, but the city made him take down the barbed wire.
Yeah, I was going to say the barbed wire. How could they make... Okay. Wonder how they could get him to do that.
Well, it's against the city regulations to have that within the confines of the city.
Oh, I see. No barbed wire allowed in the city. Interesting.
So, except for, I imagine that some jails or something, you might have some.
Oh, yes, you do.
Jury selection began today after Judge Hugh Locke turned down two defense requests.
Arrived to hear the judge's rulings on two pre-trial motions. Mr. Zundel had wanted the judge to drop the charges on the basis of the Canadian Charter's guarantees of free speech and opinion. However, Judge Hugh Locke threw out that request, saying such freedoms are not absolute, that there isn't an unbridled right to say what you think. Mr. Zundel's other request involved the questions his lawyer wanted to put to prospective jurors. as the charges involve publications containing allegations against Jews and Freemasons. Defense lawyer Douglas Christie wanted to keep both groups off the jury. He felt they wouldn't be able to provide impartial judgment in such a case.
Before jury selection began, Judge Hugh Locke denied a request by defense lawyer Doug Christie to put 9 questions about the Holocaust to prospective jurors. The judge also ruled banning Jews and Freemasons from the jury would prevent a large portion of society from taking part in the trial.
I wonder if the judge was a Freemason. He probably would have to excuse himself.
Yeah, I think at the end of even at the end of the Great Holocaust Trial video, after it was over, it showed a video of him in his chambers, the judge.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is true or not, but somebody mentioned that if you look on his desk, it has kind of a dagger come a letter opener thing facing away from him, you know, towards whoever's standing on this. And somebody said that that is a Masonic symbol of some sort. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I've never actually investigated it, but that's what I heard.
There's a high chance he's a Mason as well. Yeah,
I would say so. Very high.
Yeah.
Like my brother-in-law, who was a police officer in Hamilton, and he wanted to, you know, get up in the force. You know? So he took all these courses in order to, you know, get up to lieutenant and so on. And for some reason, he aced them, and other people were getting promoted, and he wasn't. And then one day, one of his superiors came and talked to him. You know, how are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. Have you ever thought of joining the Freemasons?
Yeah.
And he said, no. And he gave 2 reasons, he told me. First reason, he said, if an organization is that doing that much good, then why are they so secretive?
And the other reason is he doesn't like goats.
You know, and the other reason is, a real man does not wear an apron.
Yeah. The goats was a little joke there.
Yeah. Yeah, I got the goat joke.
Okay, for anyone who didn't. By the way, I'm just looking here. So the first video here got 3.2 million views. And then as you go down the thread, most people don't make it down a thread, but the second one got 193,000 views. And then the next one, 159,000 views. So it's pretty good depth. It's sort of like the depth of an album, musical album. People don't usually get past the hit song, but this has got some pretty good view counts as you go into the thread and get deeper and deeper. So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
Well, Judge Locke said about Zundel, he can't tailor his own jury to suit himself. Defense lawyer Christie said he hoped to ensure an impartial jury. He wanted to ask possible jurors if they are Jewish, if they believe gas chambers were used to kill Jews during World War II. Christie wondered if his client will get a fair trial.
I think it is very difficult to get an impartial jury on a controversial question like the one that's an issue here. We'll have to deal with the matter as it arises.
Yeah, Doug Christie was quite a lawyer, wasn't he?
He was a man among men. He was really something special. Couldn't have got half of the things done that we did without him. Him and his helper, his assistant, Kelty Zupko, who he eventually married, and they had 2 children.
Oh, wow. Is she still alive?
Yes, she is, yeah. Still living on Vancouver Island.
Does she do any publicity any interviews about the, I guess, the biggest trial in Doug's career?
Not to my knowledge. Yeah, and the first trial, at the end of the first trial, of course, Ernst went on the witness stand to explain himself. But the second trial, Ernst refused to go on there. He said, I'm not going to have my character cloud the issues, cloud the facts and stuff. So I'm going to refuse to go on the stand at that point. The first trial, I think, was 6 weeks long, and the second one was about 4 months. So a lot of stuff came out of that trial. Yeah, and at the end, he did not go on the stand. So
That's interesting. Well, if you want to, go, there's quite a few extra videos in this thread. It's pretty interesting. My main interest, again, is just simply free speech and freedom of speech and freedom of talking about controversial stories. And if this trial, this whole concept is as important today as it was back in the 80s, as far as I can tell.
Oh, one more comment on human rights commissions.
Okay.
As somebody said, the way the human rights commissions are set up here, they're very similar to the Soviet people's courts back in the day of the Soviet Union.
All right. They're communist.
And they and basically what they do is they can fine you, they can do all kinds of stuff to you, whatever they want, really. And the important thing is that unlike in regular legalese, truth is a defense. With human rights commissions, truth is not a defense. Whatever, even if you said what you said is true, doesn't mean shit to them. And also, they can put in and do put in hearsay evidence, which you can't do anywhere else. Which is why I think, of course, that they were set up for those reasons, to make their persecutions easier.
Yeah, that's it. They're persecutions, not prosecutions. But as I was pointing out today on Twitter, any judgment, any fines is not enforceable by any court. You have to collect yourself. So good luck with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just read that today, this morning, because allegedly there's a story of some guy in Windsor who would not, now I remember it. He would not shave the balls of a transgender guy who said he was a woman. So he was,
remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why it came up today in my Twitter feed, and he was fined by the Human Rights Commission of Ontario, $35,000. And I said, well, who cares? He can just ignore that. And I went and looked it up, and the tribunal or nobody will help you collect the money, because it's not enforceable by any law. It's a tribunal, which is just like a mediation service that's sponsored by the government. But they have no legal power, as far as I can tell. So when Ernst was brought up before the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal, what year was that? Was that in the 90s?
No, that was in 2000.
Well, that was in 2000. So what happened there? Do you remember?
Well, before it came to an end, he took off down to the States.
So it never...
Because he said, this is nonsense. The only reason I'm here is they're trying to bankrupt me with my lawyers and all that stuff.
Right.
So I'm having no part in it.
So
one of the newscasts about that tribunal hearing, it shows the president of the tribunal walking into the room. You know, everybody stands up in respect, except for Doug Christie and Ernst Lundell. They don't stand up. They just keep talking to each other, doing what they're doing. They just ignore him, which I thought was pretty class.
Were you there?
No, I just saw it on the news.
Okay.
I never got into any of the courtrooms or anything like that, because I was always running all the stuff on the outside, making sure everybody got to where they were supposed to go and make sure nothing happened to headquarters and all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
So as you may or may not know, every night, the first trial, well, both trials actually, there was a debriefing held by Ernst and Doug to tell everybody who did not get into the courtroom what happened during the day. And for the first trial, we made two videos about those, with those debriefings, inside the Great Holocaust Trials, Part 1 and Part 2.
Where can we find those? Did you upload them?
I don't recall whether they're on my, you could try Odyssey and just, search it there. If they're not there, they could be on my BitChute channel. In fact, I can go have a quick look if you like.
Are you focusing on Odyssey or BitChute now?
Well, I've got three other channels as well besides those, but those are my main channels.
Okay.
Okay, let me just have
a quick it's called look. Inside the Great Holocaust Trial?
Yes.
Okay, I'll search for it myself. Okay, and if you want to download all the videos off John's own personal server, then you can go to shortfake.com/Zundel. Let me make sure I got that right. Okay, sorry, it's fake11.com/Zundel. And fake11.com. Oh, sorry, it is shortfake. Okay. It's shortfake.com/Zundel and shortfake.com/Zundel2. And I'll put links to that in the show notes. And I'm adding them right now. Convert that to a link. And I'll copy that. So we're going to wrap it up now, only because I want to take in the hockey game. It's not because I am finished talking, because we have so much. There's so much content that my head spins on the Zundel topic.
Anyway, according to my search results, I hadn't put it up on Odyssey yet.
Okay.
But I do have it on my BitChute channel. So if you go to BitChute and type it in, you'll find it on my channel, John Robinson 101.
BitChute. I just find it really hard to find anything
BitChute. I just put it in on the search bar at BitChute, and it came up right away inside the Great Holocaust Trial.
Oh, it's called the Great Holocaust Trial?
Inside the Great Holocaust Trial.
Okay. Inside the Great Holocaust Trial.
There's part one and part two. They're both about an hour and a half long, or a little more.
Okie dokie. So you've got it. Somebody else uploaded it as well. So I'll put a link to that as well in the show notes.
Yeah. You know, if you really want to get the flavor of what Ernst and Doug are all about and what it was like during those trials, those are the ones to watch.
All right. Well, next time you make an appearance on the show, hopefully we will get the technical issues ironed out.
Yeah, I'm going to get that email that you sent me with those technical things.
See if that helps. Yeah,
Pass it on and see if that's something I can do about that.
Yeah, I can't really help you on that topic. It's a little above my pay grade.
Yeah, right. I'll go chase it down. See what it's all about. Because yes, I just find this a little bit annoying that it's not working now. So.
Yeah, it definitely was working before.
Oh yeah, for sure. Easy. It's great.
I'm just trying to find the second video so I can post it, but I'm having my own issues. So I got the first one up there. I got the second one up there.
Okay.
All right, John. Well, thanks for joining in. We wasted unfortunately a lot of time at the beginning where we could have been talking about this, but I think we got the general idea out there tonight. I really like this topic. I really like trying to just continue to discuss Zundel and all he did for the... I really think he's more about free speech than revisionism. I think that was the main thing that he started off on. And he was just... What do you think?
Yeah, free speech, very important subject. As a matter of fact, it is, I think, and he thought, one of the most important subjects ever. You know? As one man once put it, He said, out of all the freedoms that we have, or as of all the freedoms that we lose or have lost, give me freedom of speech and I will get all the rest of them back.
Yeah.
So it's very important that we get to say our piece, whoever you are.
But he was really, see, they really bogged him down in so many really almost unrelated topics, and they dragged him in through the mud into areas that I don't think were really his main cause. I don't know if I'm explaining that right, but.
Oh, yeah. Well, they tried to sidetrack him. There was no other way for them to kind of stop him. And after they passed certain laws against the revisionism stuff in Germany, and he, of course, was not a Canadian citizen, they were doing all this in order to get him sent back to Germany. Because there, it's very draconian, their laws, right? They don't know the first thing about democracy or freedom over there, right? And so once they get him over there, that would completely shut him up. Totally, that would be the
end. That was always their end game.
That was always their end game, yeah. And they finally managed. And but what's interesting is, over there, there's a video out about him being released from prison finally in 2010, I think it was.
Okay,
over there.
With Lady Brebeuf?
Yes.
Yes, I watched that. Lady Renouf. I tried to get a hold of her, but I haven't heard back.
Anyway, so she talked to him in the car as they were driving away.
Yes.
And, you know, what do you think of all this? He said, well, everything they've done to me has not changed my mind about anything. And before I was just their critic, and now I'm their enemy. So it certainly didn't crush him at all. Right to the very end, you know.
It may have been this one here. I'm going to try and display it here. So let me just try and find that here. And I'll put it up there. Yeah, it was... She was a great supporter of his, maybe towards the end more than anything. What do you think?
Well,
yeah.
Before that, she had a lot of her own things to do, et cetera, et cetera. But they certainly knew each other, got along, and yes, I would say that they grew more, or she grew to be more of a supporter for her as time went on, as she got to know him and what he was really up. You know, what he was really about and what he was really doing. So, yeah, and their paths, of course, coincided on many issues. So.
Oh, here, maybe I found it here.
Okay, ich packe die Fachkurzeit und komme wieder zurück. In
einer Minute. Tindle teach you first.
Where are you going?
To my
your home.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
My forest.
I want to ask you how you feel. How do you feel?
Actually, I feel unbent. Absolutely unbent. Unbowed by this experience.
Bravo.
Yeah. There's nothing that these people have done to me that would change my mind. Nothing.
That's and right. So now, how do you feel that you said a moment ago? I'd like to hear that on tape.
What was this memorable phrase?
Yeah, the memorable
that
phrase
I had,
was.
That I
the memorable phrase was before you were a critic of
it. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And now they have made
you. Yeah, yeah. Before I was merely a critic and a commentator. Now I'm an enemy.
Very good.
All right, that's a good way to end the show. John, thanks a lot. I always like having you on board because you can drag out all these memories and. Bring them.
I always like being on your show with you, Tim. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate it. And without someone navigating this extreme mountain of information, I would be lost. Really, it's just it's really good to have sort of a right hand man navigating this, because it really is important just to go through and try and find the highlights, because I don't know how else. Without someone's memory, because you've got it all in your own database, so it's really important. So,
are you hearing this beep beeping?
I heard a little bit of something. But I wasn't. Yes. I wasn't.
I'll tell you what that is.
I thought that was the video.
No, it's me.
Okay.
What's happening is I have a cordless phone.
Okay.
And my battery's dying.
So the good time to end.
So it's perfect time to end.
All right. All right. Go enjoy the hockey game if you're a Canadian. Or
yeah, you too.
All right. Thanks.
All right. And apologize to your family for me keeping you.
No, it's my fault. I should have booked, but this was the only day that I could get you on before the regular guests. So I wanted to get you on here and get this. Well, it was at top of mind. That was the main purpose. So I'll go watch it now. All right. Thanks. Okay. Thanks, John. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too.
All right. There goes John Robinson. John Robinson 101 on BitChute, on Odyssey. We're going to give you all the show notes as well. Just go to FAK902 at fakeologist.com and you'll find all the show notes, and we'll talk to you next time. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Lynn Ertel is chomping at the bit, and we'll have her back tomorrow with all her material. And everybody, have a good night.